Thank you, Alan. Well, he was correct in assuming that I didn't know that I was going to be occupying this evening. Seems I sent Roger on a wild goose chase Thursday night. He was supposed to come pick me up at the airport. I just forgot to call him and tell him that I wasn't going to be in until Saturday night. So he was a little bit early. And I was feeling pretty bad about it. I made the foolish mistake of saying I owe you one, so now I'm paying off. Seeing how he was supposed to speak tonight. I guess, yeah, lesson there is be careful what you say. This is the first time that I've ever spoken here at the temple lot. And it's probably by choice, because I would much rather be sitting out there listening to some of the people that I don't often get a chance to hear that are here in town. But I guess you're stuck with me for this evening. It's not all bad, though, because I am known for being very short-winded. In preparing my thoughts for this evening, doing some studying this afternoon, I got to thinking, what is it that makes us any different from any other people, any other Christians? And really, we're not any different than anybody else. We're the same human, frail people that you find in any other place on the earth and in any other church. We have the same weaknesses, the same desires, the same natural man that the scriptures speak of, that when we allow the natural man that is inherent in each of us to go its own way, the scriptures tell us that that natural man is an enemy to God. And so, just like everybody else, to be the friend that we need to be to God, we have to work at it, and we can't just let things go their natural ways. We're told in the scriptures, and I'd like to read, in first of all, in the Book of Mormon on page 638. This is verse 92. We're told, and this is Christ speaking, starting in the middle of the verse, it says, "Therefore I would that ye should be perfect, even as I, or your Father, who is in heaven, is perfect." That statement that Christ makes to us, "Be ye perfect," is one tremendous task that is easy to say, but it's really hard to do. That is an all-encompassing statement that takes two of these books to tell us all the things that we need to do to be perfect. And in Matthew also, in the 5th chapter, 48th verse, it tells us the same thing, Christ speaking, and he says, "Be ye perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect." So we've given, and it isn't, I don't read anything in there that makes it optional. It's a commandment that has been given to us, and it's kind of the ultimate commandment. Being perfect is, to me, is made up of a lot of little things and a lot of things that the rest of the scriptures teach us what these other things are that we need to be perfect, and the things that we need to do. You know, it isn't real difficult just being good. And I guess in my younger years I thought, well, the ideal thing is to be good and not get into trouble and be the kind of person that Jesus wants you to be. But you know, we can isolate ourselves and just get completely away from the world, the people in the world, and from everything that might draw you away from being the type of person that you would consider a perfect person. Isolate yourself to where there are no temptations, no outside things to draw you away, no things. Just lock yourself in a closet and be good. But that's, as we all know, that there's a lot more to it than that. Being good isn't enough. In the fourth chapter of James, it explains that a little bit. In the 17th verse, it says, "Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Now, this is talking about doing good, which encompasses a lot more than just being good. And this, I believe, is what Christ was, his goal when he came here on earth, was to teach us to be an example and to show us and tell us the things that we're to do. And doing good was much more important in his teachings than just being good. Also on page 422 in the Book of Mormon, it says something similar. Verse 141, "And now how much more cursed is he that knoweth the will of God and doeth it not, than he that only believeth, or hath cause to believe, and falleth into transgression." The rule books that we have in front of us point out, and both of them just over and over again tell us of the things that we are to be doing. And all of them are stating that there are things that require positive action on our part. You can't just kick back and be good. You have to do good. And I think this is what the gospel of Christ is all about. And what he was trying to teach is the things that we need to be doing. I'd like to read a verse in the 12th chapter of Luke. In the 48th verse, starting in the middle of the verse, and this is Christ speaking, "For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required." We have been given much more. I feel like we've been given much more than most of the rest of the Christian world, because we have been given to be the custodians of the fullness of the gospel. We have before us in the Bible, in the Book of Mormon, the fullness of the gospel. Something that the rest of the world doesn't recognize the witness that we use in the Book of Mormon. But with the two books put together, as it speaks of in Ezekiel, they do become one in the hand of God and one in our hand. and together constitute the fullness of the gospel, of which we are custodians. And we have been given, and we have seen things that most of the Christian world has not seen. We have witnessed things that most of the Christian world don't even recognize as happening nowadays. We've seen the miracles. We've felt, and I know all of us here have felt, the Spirit of God. To the extent and to the extreme that most of the Christian world doesn't even know exists. And it's a wonderful feeling. And we have a knowledge of our Redeemer. It's almost to where we don't have to just believe, because we've seen and witnessed things. God has worked with the people in this church over the years and has given to us lots of different things and examples and witnesses for our edification and to strengthen us when we've needed those times of strengthening. Sometimes to humble us when we've needed to be humbled. And so because of this, I think there is a lot more expected of us than is expected of most of the rest of the Christian world. The Scriptures tell us to be in the world, but not of the world. So we can't secede from it. We're in it. We have to make the best of it, and we have to do those things that have been commanded that we do. We need to be very active in striving for this perfection that we're supposed to try to attain. You know, I don't believe any of us will ever be there to where we are perfect. But the minute we stop trying, we're in trouble. Where does it start, becoming perfect? You know, are you going to wait for me? Or am I going to wait for you? It isn't going to start with the other guy. It's going to start with me. I'm the one that I have to be concerned with about attaining this perfection that we're supposed to strive for. And if each one of us can look within ourselves first and look for the flaws in our own character, find the faults that we have and recognize them and acknowledge them and work on those things, that's how we're going to attain the mission that Christ has given to us. You know, I find it interesting, the last moments that Christ spent with his disciples, and it's recorded in all four of the Gospels, the very last things that he said to his disciples were, "Teach all nations, preach the gospel to the world, preach repentance to all nations, feed my lambs, feed my sheep." The last things he said while he was still here in this continent with his people over there and in the biblical area. And so that tells me the importance of the mission that he has given to each one of us, and the mission that we have today is to feed the lambs, to teach all nations, and to preach this gospel to the world. You know, when I look at such a monumental task, I think to myself, how in the world is this little group going to accomplish such a tremendous task? When we have, sometimes it seems like we have internal problems that take our time away from pooling our efforts together and concentrating on doing these things of spreading the gospel. Sometimes we're just busy putting out little fires that we think are serious when I feel like we really need to be pooling our efforts towards these other things. You know, we heard a lot of good sermons at the reunion that was just finished a week ago. And we hear from our ministry almost all the time, we hear about the things that we're supposed to be doing. And there's a lot of things that we're supposed to be doing. And the kind of people that we're supposed to be, and the kind of lives that we're supposed to be living. And the things that we have to work at. And I keep asking the question, and I acknowledge the things that we're being told, but how do we get there? We know what we're supposed to do, but how do we get there? Well, I believe one of the ways that we get there is to look at the things that have been taught to us and the examples that have been given to us by Christ Himself. Some of the attributes that He had weren't great in the eyes of the world. There were things like gentleness and meekness and kindness and a compassion for not just the people that were nice to Him, but a compassion for the sinner. And sometimes I have trouble with that. It's easy to be nice to people that are nice to me. And it's easy to be nice to our friends and to associate with you folks here and one another. We can be good Christians to one another. It's easy. We don't really have to do a lot of work at it with each other here. But when we get out there in the world, I don't know about you, but I find that it's a lot tougher. Somebody that doesn't have the love for you that we would have in this room. Humility is one of the most important things that I think we need to have in our lives. And I think that we, the Church of Christ, unless we can learn to attain a greater degree of humility, I think we're at a standstill. How do we get it? I know we attain, at certain times, we have levels of humility that we achieve that puts us on the level where God can work with us. And we can listen, we can hear Him. But I think those times are just seldom and occasional. And I think for us to be able to accomplish the things that are set before us, for us to do, the level of humility that we have to attain is something that perhaps we don't even understand those levels. Picture yourself sitting at the table as one of Christ's disciples, to where He unrobes and He wraps a towel about Him and brings a basin of water and comes over and takes off your shoes and socks and starts washing your feet. How would you feel? That's the level of humility that we have to have to be able to accomplish the things that God has set out for us. It's going to take a lot of self-denial. You know, I can remember a time where I had a lot of things in my life that weren't right. But at this one particular time, I wasn't praying for myself. There was a need presented for someone else, a member of the church. And this particular person had a very special and a very serious need at the time. And I knelt in prayer one night. And I didn't pray for myself at all. It was just for this other individual. And it was a sincere, heartfelt prayer. And I prayed for this individual. And the tears were flowing, and it was a very good prayer. One of those prayers where you know you just, it's just like sitting down and talking to God right there face to face. And I got up from that prayer and I felt like I felt as if I had just come up out of the waters of baptism, completely renewed and a brand new person before God. I didn't even pray for myself. And I learned a lesson that night that I think perhaps we should, each one of us, consider something like this. I'm sure we, all of us here, probably have in times past, but recall these things and put our own needs aside and put the needs of our brothers and sisters and the needs of the world, of the church, foremost. And to learn the self-denial a little bit more. And I think perhaps it might be the beginning of establishing something that is going to be another step towards getting closer to that goal that we need to attain. Now, Christ told his disciples that the first should be last. You know, I would love to see the handwriting on the wall just right here. You know, if God would tell us, this is what I want you to do. Next Thursday at 9 o'clock in the morning, this is where you're going to be. And you're going to meet some people, and this is what you're going to do, and this is what you're going to say. And he's going to say that to you. This note is addressed to you. You know, it would make it kind of easy, and it would take some of the doubt out of our mind as to where do we go. If God would do that for us, just show us so there wouldn't be any doubt. And I don't doubt in the slightest that anybody who saw a message like that, if that was to them, they would do it. Or if God was standing here, or Jesus was standing here and telling us, these are the things that I want you to do, and I want you to start tomorrow morning, you wouldn't hesitate. You would do it. Without a doubt, you'd do it. But you know, he also has told us in the scriptures, like the story about doubting Thomas and the other stories in the Book of Mormon about, I don't recall where it is offhand, but how much more blessed are they that believe without having seen, and without having to have the signs and the wonders, and they still believe. How much more blessed are they? And I don't think that we're going to see Jesus walk down the hall and address this assembly and tell us, this is what you're going to do next. And I don't think we're going to see the handwriting on the wall giving us instruction. Instead, I think what we have available to us is adequate. The scriptures are before us and have told us the things that we're to do, the kind of people that we're supposed to be. And yet, sometimes we still pray for miraculous things to happen so that there won't be any doubt in our mind. You know, in the garden, when the soldiers were about to come get Jesus and take him away, Peter asked, Lord, shall we smite? And then you know what he did. He went and cut off the ear of one of the soldiers. Now, we ask all the time, Lord, what should we do? And Jesus didn't tell him to cut off that soldier's ear. Are we doing the same thing that Peter did? Asking and not listening and not waiting to hear and to feel the Spirit of God within us to let us know, to guide us and direct us. I fear that sometimes we do. I feel like we should be praying for opportunities to serve each other, to serve our Master. To fulfill this mission that is before us. Sometimes we don't see those opportunities that come before us. I recall once I was working for a company in downtown part of Phoenix. It was on a Saturday, I was all by myself. And I was walking from one building to another, and there was a driveway in between, and I had my hands full, and an individual came up and asked me, "Do you have an old pair of shoes laying around for my friend here?" And he showed me this guy that was in rags. And he had old dirty rags wrapped around his feet. Didn't even have on a pair of shoes. And there aren't a whole lot of places that keep old shoes laying around. And I didn't know of any. I didn't have any. And I was busy trying to finish some stuff up. And I told the individual, "No, I don't." And I just kind of brushed it off and went back to work. And the next couple minutes I thought to myself, well, that was foolish. You got enough money to go buy him a pair of shoes. And he certainly needs them more than you need that money in your pocket. So it took me about 2 minutes to shut things down. I jumped in the car and I took off. Looking for this guy, these guys, and I looked for about 20 minutes and never did find them. It was an opportunity that I missed and I didn't recognize. I'd like to close with a thought about the times that we live in. We can all see the changing times that we live in. The society that we live in. And we can see the decaying morality all around us, everywhere you look. It's not hidden, it's out in the open. And I don't think anybody here could deny that. It becomes more and more evident every day. And we all know it's Scripture being fulfilled. We've been told that that's what was going to happen, and we can see it happening. But one of the things that we've got to be careful of is we keep a distance from us and the rest of the world. But I just want you to realize that if we maintain the same distance that we've kept from in the past, we're going to be in trouble. Because as they get worse and worse, if we maintain that same distance and accept this changing society as, well, that isn't as bad as it used to be, some of these things, that's wrong. It's just as bad as it ever was. And if we keep that same distance, that's going to drag us right down with them. The straight and narrow is not getting any wider. It's still the straight and narrow. Thank you.